This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Sunday, October 11, 2009, and this is the Carol Cox Show on K108, and today we have a guest host in the studio. Carol is on assignment on the neighbor island, so today we have Panos Pirvidoros and Cliff Slater. They'll be talking to you here at 524-1080, and let's meet the two gentlemen. Hello, Panos.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, one and all. This is Panos Pirvidoros. I was on this program a couple of weeks ago with Carol Cox. And on my left over here, is my right actually, is Cliff Slater. Cliff, morning.
Good morning. Cliff Slater, I'm chair of the HonoluluTraffic.com, and glad to be here this morning.
And of course, we're going to talk about rail, and there is no better day to talk about the proposed Honolulu Rail because it's all over the Sunday newspapers, particularly the Advertiser. I believe it has a couple of articles, but before we go there, Cliff has been around quite a while, and particularly all through all the rail projects that were once upon a time were proposed all the way to the current one for Honolulu, starting, I believe, with the early 80s. So he's going to give us a quick rundown of how many proposals they've been and what happened to them.
Well, We started in 1967, but
67.
with the Oahu Transportation Study, then that didn't come to anything. And then then in 1982, when we had another one of these done deals, there was a new mayor elected, Mayor Anderson, and she wasn't in office very long before she canceled.
The
thing as being not worthwhile.
Was that the heart or not? Honolulu Area Rapid Transit in 1982.
Right, and that was the reason for that was that the governor at the time, George Ariyoshi, he was very quietly opposed to rail. He just thought it was a waste of money, and also the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, Ben Cayetano, then Senator Ben Cayetano, he was also opposed. She killed that, and then Frank Fassi got back into office in 84 and got the thing started again. I didn't personally get interested in it until about 86, 87. And then we went through the whole thing, which culminated in it being voted down by the City Council in 1992, September 92. And then again, it started almost immediately because there's so much money in rail. And typically they're not, as you know, that they're not put out to bid. There's a lot of discretionary decisions made by elected officials, and so that tends to be, under those circumstances, a lot of campaign contributions.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they're back into it. And
parenthetically, in the 84 to 1992 proposal, how much was the percentage share of the federal government? How much were offering at the time?
In 82, I don't remember,
okay.
But I will say that if you go on our website, we mm-hmm. have the whole 1982 FEIS, the
mm-hmm.
Federal Final Environmental Impact Statement, mm-hmm. is on our website, honolulutraffic.com,
okay.
As is the 92.
So in 92, how much were the feds offering? Was it
30%.
30%.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
$618 million.
Mm-hmm.
$1 billion.
Million, yeah.
So After the 92 failure, then this started up. We did have a BRT program in the meantime. In the 2000, that failed in 2004 when the feds withdrew their support, and almost immediately, in fact, just a little before that, in 2002 is mm-hmm. when the governor first proposed that this might be done. It was
mm-hmm.
in December 2002. October 2003 was when she proposed it. And then from then on, the next thing was that Mayor Hanneman got involved, and so we're back in the business again.
Mm-hmm.
And we've spent so far about $100 million just studying the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, it was one of those things where instead of asking the question, what do we need to mm-hmm. take care of our transportation problems, it was decided we will build a rail transit line.
Right.
Rather than look at all the alternatives.
Okay. This is a good time to remind our listeners that the lines are open. The number is 524-1080. Any and all your questions about rail, whether you're pro or against, are most welcome. And we'll be very happy to address them or provide an explanation if you need one. So, Cliff, in the 2008 elections, there was a HUI, or political organization formed, the Stop Rail Now.
Mm-hmm.
What was that about?
That was an attempt to put this on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
We came very close.
Well, the intent actually was 100% successful because it was put on the ballot.
Yes.
Yeah.
It
mm-hmm.
was. But what the city then did, they spent about $3.1 million, they tell us, essentially fighting that referendum,
mm-hmm.
and then in addition there are other supporters, landowners, engineering companies, construction firms, etc., spent another $1.1 million. So, you know, there was over $4 million spent
mm-hmm.
between the city and their supporters on this issue. And I think we spent about $60,000, so it wasn't, you know, couldn't call it a fair
right.
game there.
Yeah.
And, of course, we never were able to get the city to admit that their own plans called for more, you know, that rail would result in greater traffic congestion than we have today.
Right.
They never could admit it.
Right.
And you
right.
challenged the mayor in the
debate and all, yeah. And time and again, I mean, we point to their own numbers. That even today they show that for all trips between IEA and the UH in
mm-hmm.
2030, in other words, when we have full development and the rail theoretically is in existence, trips by car between IEA and the UH will be faster than by rail.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's something that might help a little bit, some commutes from way far out, Kapolei, there. So far failed Hopili because that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is, you know, Kapolei is fully developed and in theory gets two stations, but for now, for the project that is on the table, the first 20 miles, there is no stations in Kapolei. I mean, people, the nearest station will be about 1 mile off of Kapolei, and actually in mm-hmm. the middle of Hopili, the Beer Horton project. which we know that for now is not going ahead. I mean, that's the big agricultural area that at present time Alun farms and other places are operating to generate, you know, produce and what have you. It's prime agricultural land. So you were involved with that land use commission. I don't know if you actually testified, but
didn't have the opportunity. But but we did have the opportunity to listen to, for the first time, the UH sales soils experts talking about the soil in the Ho'opili project and nearby. And for the first time, they told us that this is the finest soil in the Hawaiian Islands, which, because of the fact that in Hawaii we can grow all year round, makes it the most productive soil in the world. Okay. Having said that, they then said that the problem with this soil is it's great for agriculture, but for construction, it's terrible because it is what is called a verdisol, which is a soil that is almost self-mulching. It's moving all the time. So when you go to build highways, houses, etc.,
you have to clear it off.
Well, right, because if you don't, this soil leads to cracking of the driveways and the houses, etc. So, and then the fellow described that he said the only thing you can do with this kind of soil is you've got to just take it off. You take it to the dump, and you replace it with inferior soils and coral, etc. And you know, when you think of the PR of that, people, the moment anybody heard that, that was the end of it. Okay, I mean, I don't think that Ho'opili has a chance. Given that, in fact, I think that the UH West Oahu campus, they better find somewhere else to expand to because I don't think that's going to cut it either.
So then, if that is dead in the water, the big Ho'opili housing, which was 13,000 new residences, one or two brand new rail stations, it was an anchor for that 6 mile initial segment of the 20 mile. Right. So if that is off the table,
well, it's off the table in a practical sense. But but if you look at what the LUC said, we'll come back and talk to us in a year. The fact of the matter is that it for all practical purposes is dead.
Fine. I mean, we are not pro against Ho'opili now for whatever reason. The question I was raising is that for whatever reason, and obviously one is the agricultural quality, there were other issues raised as well. Congestion, the freeway is already backlogged, so the DOT says, you know, you folks did a good job maybe with the traffic lights, but you didn't address anything about the freeway. So for whatever reason, that project, let's say, is not happening. 13,000 new homes that, you know, it was supposed to be a transit-oriented community and everything, it's not happening. How come if rail starts still starting out there? Who is it going to serve?
It's not going to serve anybody but the mayor. The reason they're starting it out there is there will be less, you know, fewer objections to it than if you started, say, at Ala Moana Center. That wouldn't be underway for more than a week before before there would be a howl once people understood the enormity of the stations and the and the actual rail line snaking through town. Once people understand that.
Okay. No, I'm trying to understand the logic, you see, but because, you know, homes are kind of friendly, smaller, whatever. I mean, and apparently the Land Use Commission and the people don't want to put any homes there. Why would they allow one or two stations which are massive, like an elevated football field, to be built? Because that's the beginning of rail. And that's the headline on the advertiser that I'm segueing. It says it's the rail is on schedule to start 6 months late, meaning in December, because it supposedly should have started already based on 2006 numbers that I had. So why does it even make sense, and how is it possibly going to start on prime agricultural land?
Sure. I mean, it really doesn't make sense.
Right.
And as far as this still in December groundbreaking, I mean, they have yet to go into, I mean, with delay after delay after delay. 2.5 to 3 years ago, the mayor said, we are just about to go into preliminary engineering. That's a next part of the environmental process.
Very
okay?
true. Mm-hmm.
Still have not gone into it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Still have not been given permission to enter it. And yet, they're going to say that over the next 2 months, they're going to, A, have the permission to enter preliminary engineering. Okay, they are going to have the final environmental impact statement signed by the governor, approved by the FTA. Okay, and then after that, they're going to get the record of decision, the final decision that by the FTA that says they have successfully completed the entire environmental process. Doesn't say they'll give them any money, but it says it's completed the process. And then after that, they're going to have the letter of no prejudice. This is the thing you get from the feds, which said it's okay to give to spend your own money before we give you our money. And they're all going to do that in 2 months. I don't believe so. I just don't see. I mean, the feds move very, very slowly, and I can't see how this can possibly be done in 2 months.
Now, point of clarification, the feds have their separate process. They are not dependent on our governor's signature, right? It's a requirement to have it.
Yes.
But do they require the governor's signature on the state? They do?
Yes.
But I hear that, you know, the state DOT still has significant issues with the project along various areas that affect the right-of-way, and also about the airport that have not been addressed. And I heard that midweek last week, so it's not like my... it's like several months ago, and it's been patched. So what is our expectation? Is the governor going to sign for it? I mean... Just one of your departments is having serious concerns with the mitigation and other issues.
We don't know.
Of course we don't know, but, you know,
But definitely, she definitely has to sign it.
Uh-huh.
If she doesn't sign it, it doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I see. So it's a major political issue. Yeah, one way or another.
Yeah.
Interesting. So what is the advertiser? I didn't have time to read the article today. Sean Howe is on the cover.
Right.
And what's the scoop?
Well, he's just talking about the shortage of the costs, the shortage of the tax collections.
Mm-hmm.
The city is now admitting to being short, I think it's $320 million. From what they said they would collect from from the draft environmental impact statement, which is about a year ago. But they're making that up by taking from the federal bus funding. As you know, the feds provide us with the funds, 80% of the funds to buy buses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that was scheduled in for about $35 million a year for the next 8 years. What is happening is the city is, in their latest plan, is grabbing those bus funds to use to construct the rail.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means in practice is that instead of us getting the Fed funds for buses and going ahead in the usual way, we will have to either cut back on bus service heavily, or we will have to provide those funds out of the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I talk about the general fund, given that, that's $30-odd million a year. And then you take what most people don't realize is the operating subsidies for the rail and the bus, okay, come out of the general fund. There's no federal funds for that. It's all coming out of essentially property taxes.
Right, property taxes. So it's a huge, huge deficit there. And what was the latest view of the city of how they're dealing with it? I mean, are they spinning words, or do they have a plan to make up for the shortfall other than stealing from the buses, essentially, which is what happened in Los Angeles, too, and was a lawsuit that...
We did a Freedom of Information Act request to the federal government, and we got the city's latest plan, August 2009. That's it. It's taking the bus funds.
Taking the bus funds.
Okay.
That's sad.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the bus, I mean, historically has been our mass transit service, and it's one of the better systems in North America, and it serves a lot of neighborhoods. I know a lot of folks that they listen to us appreciate the bus, and in general, there is really no better mode than to serve a city of our size. And in addition, given our geography, our valleys and our peaks and everything, it's and our ridges, only buses can address these populations. I'm looking at the alignment of the rail, and for over 2 miles, it's going like in the middle of Kamehameha Highway. And then you drive it, and you look to the left and the right, and there's just shops, dealerships, a big shopping mall, what have you. Where is the residences? Where is our commuters that, you know, in the morning, they're going to be served and abandon their vehicles and take the... Well, the city comes back and says, well, all of this will happen by bus, because people will be collected by buses. And at the same token, their financial plan says that, you know, we're going to cut the funds for buses. They cannot have it both ways. I mean, okay, you can cut a couple of express bus routes replaced by the rail, but all your feeder network has to have several buses to provide a convenience, if any, because, you know, we know, and I teach, you know, transportation engineering at the UH, that one of the killer negatives for mass transit is transfers.
Yes.
It's important. If you can't get in, it doesn't matter sometimes if you cannot have a seat for the full length, or if the route, the trip is somewhat long, like a lot of people commute from Kailua to the UH, it could be nearly an hour. But if you have a seat, you're in the bus, you can read the paper, and all, you don't have to transfer. If you start having transfers, pick them up from home, transfer along Kamehameha Highway, take you to where you want to go, but then take another bus in order to go where you work, I mean, that's two transfers. It's just so inconvenient to be doing it day in and day out, four times a day.
Right. I've had many discussions with people that, mm-hmm. that say, you know, why are we opposed? Because I'm going to use the rail transit. And I say, fine, where do you live? And they tell me where they live. And I say, how are you going to get from your home to the rail line?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, where's the nearest station? Because
mm-hmm.
they haven't really looked at it.
Right.
And then they say, oh, well, I'm going to drive down to it. And you say, yeah, but there's no parking at that station.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'll take the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so you find out how long the bus takes. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and then they get to the, now they get to transfer to the station, get, you know, go up the escalators and whatever,
right.
two floors up, and get onto the train. Okay. They don't realize that the train, at best, is going to go 30 miles an hour average.
Right. Average
speed. Most probably 25, 26.
Mm-hmm.
Then they get to the far end, and you say, well, and where do you work? And they tell you, and you say, well, how are you going to get from the nearest station?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they say, where's the station? So you tell them, and they say, well, I'm not going to walk that far. I guess I'll take... And then they stop, and then they say, I'm not going to do all that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, that's...
Yep.
I heard that so many times.
Exactly. I mean, and you might do it maybe once or twice a month when your car is in repairs or this and that for special reasons. But that does not... I mean, there are a lot of manini reasons to have this as the city tries to do it as an alternative.
Right.
But really, all this sum up to 1 or 2%, a fringe type of utility, which is fine if you have, you know, an auxiliary kind of mode such as, you know, jitneys, or some kind of taxi service and all, flexible, cheap. You cannot possibly justify $5.6 billion for such a marginal alternative. I mean, and time and again, I want to repeat it to our listeners that as a professor of transportation, I've been taking positions on various systems. And it's not that I believe that rail has no place in the world. Rail has no place in Honolulu. And time and again, I was in the... City Council Alternatives Analysis, and then in the City Council Technology Expert Panel to help with the selection. And as I said, every time that the public asked, my recommendation is location specific. I was in favor of the Athens Metro, and it proved to be a godsend. Completely different density, completely different routes. And of course, Athens is, folks, 5 million people. There is a substantial tax base to pay for the system. Automobile ownership is much lower. people needed a system like that, and of course it works well. In fact, it works so well that the trains were run down in about 15 years, and they are getting replacement trains at very high cost. Speaking again of costs, the BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit, that's the system in San Francisco. Many of you are probably quite familiar with it. It is, by some accounts, a successful system, but BART is 30 years old. So if you read the local literature, and depending on what you count, BART is in the hole for somewhere between $3 and $10 billion for complete refurbishing. I mean, every 30 years, roughly, you have to redo the system. The rails are going bad, the systems, the control systems are going bad, and of course you have to replace escalators, elevators, and the trains themselves, which after 30 years are completely run down. And this is our future. We have to remember that, you know, it's not like you do it and you forget about it. Every 25 to 30 years, it's a problem. You have to redo it. Now, while I was reading all these things, I hit a sort of a passage there that explained that the trains in San Francisco, they are made of aluminum, because the Bay Area, they were afraid that if used any other type of metal, they would have corrosion issues. So I don't know why the city will completely take a complete and absolute position that corrosion is not a problem. Corrosion is a problem, and you have to pay extra money to combat it. It is, of course, a solvable problem, but at a cost. So, I mean, and I remember with dismissing, you know, the late Barbara Marshall, who made, you know, corrosion a big issue, because, and she was referring to Aloha Stadium and all these experts of metal manufacture, and, you know, the huge public outlays we had to do in order to repair it and re-repair it and whatever. And now, actually, the stadium, because of rust and other problems, is stuck. It cannot convert to baseball and football configurations. Same thing with the rail. Why can the big problem I have, among others, with this city is that their transparency and their openness to say, yes, okay, we have a problem, therefore we're going to order aluminum trains that they are, you know, X percent more expensive. Why don't admit that there is an issue and there are solutions for the issue, instead of trying to present a rosy picture about everything, about the cost, about the technology, and on and on and on.
Well, I think the greatest example of the lack of transparency was this recent situation where at the same time that the city was making a presentation to the Federal Transit Administration, part of their application to go into preliminary engineering, they were telling the federal government that they would be $520 million short in their tax collections by the time the tax ended in 2023.
Okay.
At that same time, they're telling our newspapers and the city council, and anybody who was following the city council proceedings, they're saying, yes, we're going to be a little short in the first couple of years, but in the out years we'll make it up.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things were going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is about a clear and unequivocal lie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there is no other thing that you can say about that. I mean, that is plain out lying by the city administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is quite sad. That is quite sad. So right now, can you re-summarize for us what the status is, where we are, and what is to be expected outside of, you know, the city propaganda? What are the steps that are coming up? Because it looks like, you know, nothing has been accomplished. We're still in the middle of the environmental process. I mean,
right.
Not nothing has been accomplished in terms of, you know, actually building anything.
Right. Well, before they can build anything, they have to, let's say they were given the permission to go into preliminary engineering tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And let's explain that step, since I'm an engineer. Preliminary engineering, right now, for the most part, we were dealing with planning level of analysis. Preliminary engineering is the type of engineering that, again, is not final engineering. There is the final step, which is the final design for putting something, a structure, on the ground. But preliminary engineering is close enough to define all the parameters for the guideway, the stations, which, as the FTA said, is a very it's an important step for also narrowing down your cost variance and
right.
getting some more
mm-hmm.
accurate estimates of what you are going to be needing. And interesting, I mean, the newspaper says they are starting in December. How can you possibly start when you don't have any preliminary engineering for the guideway?
Well,
so it's really conflicting.
Well, actually, that you know, the headline is not the same as the
text.
As the text.
As the text. Yes.
The text is it says that you know, in 2 months the city plans to begin construction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as Barbara Marshall said 2 years ago, well, you know, there may be two politicians and a shovel, but the, you know, that's going to be the extent of the groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the headline doesn't relate to the text
mm-hmm.
at all. Okay, the text makes it. It really shows there's really doubts about whether that. In fact, we get in this particular article we get quotes from the city that says, you know, it's not critical December,
mm-hmm.
right? Up to now, December has been
right.
critical. Now suddenly it's not critical.
But is it possible, because I remember earlier quotes from Hahnemann, that the actual engineering, I mean, in other words, the fees to consultants for preliminary engineering have started being paid to them years since
yes.
the alternatives analysis. Therefore, a big chunk of the preliminary engineering has been completed.
Right.
So what we're talking about, the FDA thing entering PE, is a formality. So all along we've been sort of cheating. Because we're collecting our local taxes, we've been paying
right.
them, paying another bunch of engineers to do the PE. So the PE may be completed and this step of FDA is a formality. But why would they do that and what are the consequences?
They're trying to speed it up.
This is
not about transportation. This whole thing is about the governor's race next year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what this is all about, and why he has to show by the spring at least. Okay,
mm-hmm.
he's got to show progress
mm-hmm.
If he's going to really say, I'm just like Frank Fussy. I get things done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean that kind of an attitude. Personally, at the moment, I just don't see how this is all going to happen
in
December.
The timeline.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially, one of the things Council Chair Apo is saying that he's going to hold hearings on the final environmental impact statement,
mm-hmm.
which is good, because if we can some way make it clear to the public what the city is forecasting. For example, the city is forecasting that they're going to increase the percentage of people using public transportation from today's 6%
mm-hmm.
to, if we now have to spend the $5.5 billion and there are no cost overruns, okay,
mm-hmm.
then it's, we're going to go to 7%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 6% of the people to 7% of the people. That's all the city's forecasting.
Right.
Okay, that doesn't, you know, doesn't compute for most folks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that also that the city is forecasting the traffic congestion will get worse after the rail is in and after we've spent the $5 billion. That the net result is it will not be a reduction in their commute time, it will be an increase. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If we can get people just to understand what the city is forecasting in plain language and get the city to admit
mm-hmm.
that.
Right.
Okay?
Right. That's a big one.
Well, I must say, we just once, the day before the election,
mm-hmm.
you may remember we were on KHVH
with Mike
Schneider.
Yes, and Wen Yoshioka, yes.
Wen Yoshioka,
mm-hmm.
and we got them to admit that, yes, in the end, traffic congestion would be worse with rail.
Right,
okay.
But less worse, as they kept insisting. less worse, that's an interesting... And I'd like to remind our listeners, the lines are open. 524-1080. We'd love to hear from you why you love rail for Honolulu. I mean, your positive perspective for that is most welcome, and we need to understand why you think it's a cost-effective alternative for us, and why you would have voted, for example, positive for it. One interesting question I find, and when we had a conference in the summer down at in Waikiki Transportation Conference, the director of the Oahu Metropolitan Planning Organization, Mr. Gordon Lam, was there, and he was presenting the long-term plans for Oahu. And these are the plans on which the rail forecasts were built upon. And they actually emanate from DBDT mostly. But as you have seen in the alternatives analysis and other documents, there is huge percentages of growth forecast for Central Oahu and for Oahu in general. My personal perspective is that these are by now more than pie in the sky, because we're not even talking about 50 or 100 years. We're talking about 18 to 20 years forth. So I don't see this 40 to 140% growth that they forecast. There is no economy to support them. There is no housing demand to support them. I mean, if anything, the prices out there right now compared to the rest of the costs are quite affordable. I mean, you get a lot of house for $400,000 in the general vicinity of Kapolei. Where are the sales? The sales are still quite low. So where is the future development? I mean, right now they cannot even sell. Why would they be able to sell thousands and thousands of units that, you know, we've been informed that they will be created even outside Ho'opili, because more than 25,000 homes have already been zoned to be developed. So, you know, it is legal to build a lot of homes in the general Mililani to Kapolei area, particularly towards Kapolei. Who will be the buyers? Where will be the growth? What is your perspective about that? Is it reasonable to expect all that growth out there that might necessitate a mass transit system?
Well, what we're looking at the moment is a decline in our population. I mean, that's been going on for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And the forecast for growth in our economy, which is much dependent on the mainland, especially California,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there are no economists are saying this is going to snap back like it
right.
has in earlier
in
recessions. So mm-hmm. this one, it's going to we're turn around right now, but we're turn around to almost no growth
mm-hmm.
from a low point. So you know, a lot of businesses, small businesses, have been hanging on and hanging on,
mm-hmm.
losing a little money, but that there comes a point where you can't lose any more
right.
money, and you know,
you close up.
Your fingers
mm-hmm.
slip mm-hmm. off the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they close up. I think we're going to see more and more closed businesses, which means fewer employees.
Mm-hmm.
But most businesses have not really come to grips with a very slow growth scenario that the economists are talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're going nationally into so much debt
mm-hmm.
That is going to be a drag on the economy for some years to come.
Yeah, you know, I was astounded just yesterday. A little anecdote: my dentist is at Nuanu Square, right next to where the Hungry Lion restaurant is.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to my dentist every 6 months. Between my previous visit and yesterday, there are three places vacant in that small, you know, strip mall.
Mm-hmm.
It's astounding. It's astounding to see that essentially 30% of the stores have disappeared in 6 months. And, of course, we have lost a lot of restaurants. I mean, a lot of the smaller hotels are doing poorly and on and on and on. I mean, occupancy. So I agree with you. I mean, I don't know where these forecasts are coming from. And, you know, we are basing already the ridership's expectations are inflated. But if you don't even have half of the growth that they're projecting for out there, where is the ridership?
Yeah.
Ho'opili doesn't look likely. I mean, it is total insanity to even conceive that the system should start out there. At a minimum, they should quickly change their plans and start somewhere that there is some. Actually, if they were to start, in other words, start at Pearl Highlands and try to come towards town. Or, of course, better yet, as you said, start at Ala Moana and try to connect to the airport. So at least we have, if we wound up with a $2 billion system, That's my gripe with the whole plan. Create a system that is at least minimally functional.
Yes.
And, of course, they tell you that, you know, you cannot have the system because, and that is correct, that you cannot have a rail system without a rail yard, which is an expansive piece of land where you store your trains, you maneuver them, you clean them, you fix them, and then you put them back on the track to go back and forth. But I cannot believe that they cannot find at least a minimum package, a minimum parcel in the neighborhood of the airport to do that.
Yeah.
So at least airport to downtown, they have a system, and then they chug along and go Aloha Stadium or whatever, if any funding can be found.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's reckless from a policy perspective to start out in the boonies because then you trap the entire community to try to make something out of the system, and that is unconscionable.
Well, my understanding is that the people who put together the Kamehameha Schools plan have a rail yard that's sited that is much closer to town. I haven't seen the plan, but I mean,
that's a good one, because I believe they got a rail engineer who knows what he's talking about. And in fact, I became aware that for 2-3 years he had a stint, or more than a stint, he has a significant role at the Attiko Metro, which is the Athens metro system. So the person who did the Bishop Estate plan knows what he's talking in many respects. Now, of course, that system has its own problems. Are you aware of any system that is actually mixed, elevated, and on ground the way that Bishop Estate described it to the advertiser?
No, I'm not. But I'm told that there are some being built in Europe at the moment.
That they have these characteristics, yeah. It's having a lack of citing something like that is always a difficulty. Now, I know you are an expert in reviewing the DIS, and I want to ask you a couple of questions about it. First of all, who are some of the agencies that they have issues outside of, the state DOT, but even including that, I covered that a little bit. What are local and federal agencies that they have issues with a rail DIS?
Well, for example, National Park Service objects to it because the rail runs elevated adjacent to the Pearl Harbor, the Arizona Memorial. And they just regard that as sacrilege. They have this train running by every minute and a half, you know, 3 minutes each between.
Right.
It's a minute and a half each way.
Half, yeah.
And so they've strongly objected. all the federal judges, in 9 federal district court judges here, that each one of them has signed a paper saying that they object to this because it having the rail line run adjacent to the federal courthouse puts the courthouse in danger. I mean, federal buildings, especially after the Oklahoma deal, are real targets for terrorists. Okay, and you know, they're saying you have the rail running elevated, so the thing's up maybe 50 feet in the air. The train. Makes it very easy to lob things into the federal building. The General Services Administration, which administers the building, objects. The U.S. Marshal's Office, which is responsible for the security, they object. And incidentally, people who are interested, if they go on HonoluluTraffic.com, we have all those listed there, all their comments. The U.S. Historical Association objects to, as does as our state historical association object to the way the train runs through historically significant areas, Chinatown, etc., and so on. I mean,
I forget what is the organization that. Several of our friends sit in the board, and they object about Aloha Tower and the view planes around Aloha Tower. Is it Outdoor Circle or one of those Hawaii Thousand Friends? I don't want to use
them.
Names.
Every single, there is, without exception, from the Sierra Club to the Outdoor Circle to Hawaii Thousand Friends, whatever, every single environmental organization objects to elevated rail going through town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In fact, anyone who has ever kind of walked or driven the rail mm-hmm. and understood what they are going to do objects to it. I mean, there's no
right.
rational person, okay? Politicians aside, I mean, because they are being rational in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be elected governor, then this is one of the ways to do it. But nobody else wants that. I mean, this is
mm-hmm.
this is an enormity
mm-hmm.
being foisted on us.
What are some of the... I hear that EPA had some concerns. What are EPA's
That's right.
concerns?
Well, EPA objected, as we did too, as the alternatives were not studied. You know, they are required by federal statute to study all reasonable alternatives. That's
mm-hmm.
what the statute
mm-hmm.
says.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they, as you well know, they totally misled the public about hot lanes. About managed lanes. They have not studied at grade light rail. They've told people that they've held hearings on light rail, etc., you know, at grade light rail. We don't miss any of those council hearings.
Right.
Okay, I've never even heard them mention the word at grade light rail,
mm-hmm.
let alone that they've held hearings on the issue.
Right.
They've only held hearings on one thing, their plan.
Right.
No changes.
Which is actually, that's the big misnomer, because for the last 4 or 5 years, they keep calling it light rail. I mean,
right.
only now they were finally caught, and the advertiser put it on the first page that, you know, it's rapid transit, it's heavy rail, it's fully elevated. It has nothing to do with light rail.
Right.
Nothing.
The it's very interesting that there was a report issued at the behest of... the Federal Transit Administration, independent company Jacobson Engineering,
mm-hmm.
and they issued a lengthy report on where the things stood. Okay, and one of the things that they really went into, they really made a point of, this is not light rail, this is heavy rail.
Heavy rail. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we've been saying that for years and getting
right.
nowhere.
Right. I mean, it's interesting that pretty much everything we said was the truth and nothing but the truth. And
yeah.
it's so easy of how, you know, politicians bankrolled with huge campaign contributions. They keep going out there and telling people that, you know, we are rail opponents and we're using the facts all along, the proper
yeah.
terminology, the proper impact, even their own numbers, like the one you quoted, and I love to quote it again. You pay $5.6 billion and you increase mass transit from 6% that the bus is doing alone to 7% that the rail with the bus will be doing maybe in 2030.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't get any less cost effective than this.
Right.
Waste of money, really. I mean, there is no other way to put it. So, we're talking about alternative analysis, and you're quite correct. So light rail did not even exist there, as there was no the Pearl Harbor tunnel, some effective solutions to really solve the quagmire for the central Oahu. How about hot lanes? What happened there? I mean, what was the excuse of why? I mean, hot lanes, I just published and to announce to our audience here, if they would like to see my blog post, I have a lot of transportation-related posts at Fix Oahu. Just Google that and it'll take you straight to the site. Just Fix Oahu, use it as one word, Fix Oahu. For the hot lanes, my latest blog was that what a miracle was, nothing, I mean, transportation folks don't use this word, for Miami and the second project now in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and a major article in the Journal of the Institute of Transportation Engineers of how you can gain capacity and increase speeds by over 30% for reasonable amounts of expenditure. So one of the best solutions in the nation, and what happened to the alternatives analysis? What kind of hot lanes was that they looked at and it was so negative?
Well, first off, they really had to cheat to make that work. You may remember, they took out
The zipper lane, you mean?
The zipper lane.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So they add two lanes, they take out one. Yes.
Right. Okay. And the interesting thing was that in the alternatives analysis process, we had and you were a member of the Transit Advisory Task Force. Okay, and when the fellow who was in charge of that,
Hayashida?
The facilitator.
Oh, the facilitator. Yeah, I'll remember his name in a minute. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Okay.
When he wrote up the thing, there is an appendix to it that says, okay, these are all the things you have to look at in the managed lane process to improve it. One of which, of course, was putting back the zipper lane. But it disappeared.
Yeah.
The whole thing just disappeared. They just ignored it, and they just went ahead as though the guy hadn't written anything at all.
Right.
Okay, and so, you know, they said, no, I'm not going to do that. Had a whole new scoping process of which they ignored it. I mean, it's just bizarre. I mean, it's one of the major things that where we find this whole document, the DEIS, legally deficient, and I think that will come out in court.
Do you think it'll come out in court? Yeah, it's quite a few deficiencies, yeah.
Yeah.
How are we doing in time? We have two more minutes. Obviously, we have major issues related to cost. Cost is... not only the cost is outrageous, I mean, I don't think in this program we mentioned that based on the city's estimates, not our estimates or any other inflations, the cost per person on Oahu, meaning that infants and the elderly on retirement, everybody, the cost per person is in the order of 4,300. So a family of four should expect to pay something in the order of $17,000 off of their income just to build it.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
That's the number that has come out, right?
Yes.
And that doesn't include anything about operation. It's just to install the system.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, if you take that amount of money and you put it over just those people who are going to ride the rail, I mean, it's like a distance to the first black hole. You know?
That's right. That's right. So cost is outrageous. We thank you very much for listening to our show. It's a show with two co-hosts, Cliff Slater of HonoluluTraffic.com and Panos Prevedouros from the UH Civil Engineering, sitting in and having the privilege of sitting in instead of Carl Cox, who is out of town. And we had a one-hour discussion about the proposed rail transit. Thank you for being with us. And we appreciate your time, and maybe in the future we'll come back and discuss more. Yes, Cliff, go ahead.
Yes, I think that folks who do want to know more, HonoluluTraffic.com is one website, and Fix Oahu.
Yes. We thank you very much.
Yes.